Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us on this latest edition of the SPME webinars. We have the privilege of having today our friend and colleague, Major General Reserve Gershon Cohen. Gershon has served in the IDF for over 42 years, and he's currently now a senior research fellow at the Begin and Sadat Center. I also have with me this afternoon our friend and colleague, Alex Jaffe, and of course myself, Asaf Romorowski. I want to put out a few housekeeping issues. I know this is a hot topic, and so I'm glad we have so many attendees this afternoon. Gershon is going to be talking to us for about 20 minutes, and then we will open up the floor to as many questions as people have. People already sent questions, and so please bear with us. We will do our best to get to all the questions, and if we don't, we will make sure to answer them after the call. If you have a question, please raise your hand or click on the hand icon on the screen if you're logged in through the computer, and I'll be able to unmute you through the phone. You'll say question, and I'll be able to unmute you through the phone, and then you can ask your question. Let me make a few housekeeping matters as well for SPME at large. SPME is bipartisan all around. And so everybody is in. So we are here to support all views and all perspectives. And so we're not endorsing one perspective or another. We're providing a forum that everybody can share their opinions about topics as we've done over the past few weeks. To that end, I would like to also say that we want to thank one of our main patrons, Dr. Bob Shulman, for helping support these calls and allowing this to happen. And we, of course, are very happy that all of you are here with us this afternoon. So without further ado, the floor is now on to you, Gershon. And thank you again for joining us.
Okay, great. For me, it is evening. For you, a good noon. And I'm really ready for that enterprise. Just due to the fact that I came just now from a meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu. And we came to meet him with a group, organization called Abitronistim. It was established 3 months ago in order to create another direction and another worldview that coming to face those who are called commanders for Israel security that are in the left wing. And we came to support Prime Minister Netanyahu, and we found him in a focus, absolute focus, really amazing. And he shared us with part of his deliberation and hesitation as well. And doesn't matter what really happened there, of course, we are all agree that Israeli state is standing now in a very dramatic historic junction. And it is no less important even than what happened in 67 and 48, and I'll try to explain. So everyone called it annexation. We can go ahead with that concept, but actually it is not just annexation. Even if we are speaking about the Russian annexation of Crimea, the half island, and they will refuse to call it annexation because they are really considering this island as part of Russian history, part of Russian culture, a lot of stories like Chekhov connected to that place, and they are not considering themselves as annexing a place that is in a terminology of occupation. Doesn't matter, but why it is really necessary to come to that junction now? And I have to explain. First of all, we have one very important issue. It is a security consideration. But I'm always emphasizing that the security in itself is not enough. You cannot really understand the whole story of Zionism and the dream vision without looking to the whole vision of Zionism, that it is not just to come to a safe shelter to get security, because that could be found in Los Angeles, in New Jersey, even in Berlin today. So if it is just a project to look out to find a better place for Jews after Holocaust, maybe we are not living in the accurate position, in accurate location. We have anyhow to struggle for that security. But of course, if we are already here, we must pay attention and all awareness about the whole consideration of security, because if we are already living here, doesn't matter why, and go immediately to speak a little bit just about why, but if we are already here, we must get security. And the main story, even Ben Gurion said in Peel Committee, when he was asked to explain what is the legitimation for his claims to get this land, he didn't say Balfour Declaration or San Remo. He went to the Bible. And most of Israelis, and I think Jews, wherever they are living in the world, cannot ignore this part of the Jewish tradition. Doesn't matter whether they are believing it as a something, as a promise, a real concrete promise by God, or just as a narration, a narrative that traditionally we are sharing with each other. But these two main the considerations, one the security and the other, the main story of the Jewish redemption in this fatherland, they are just coming together. And actually we cannot bring a clear line to divide between them. Because at the end, without really being motivated and motivating our young generation to live here due to the trust that this is part of our necessary tradition, we can find ourselves like Bulgaria or Romania, that young generations are going to another place. Of course, if they have to struggle, but just to come back to the security reasoning, practical reasoning, professional reasoning. I wrote a research about that, that was published in the Begin Sadat Center, analyzing the new warfare, explaining why Israel cannot defend itself in the borders of 67. Actually, it was accepted in the Pentagon in a map that was made in 1967. After 242 UN resolution. Why in 67 we succeeded to defend ourselves with, from 67 borders and not today? We must really learn a lot about the new threats emerging in the 21st century. One of the cornerstone of that explanation is a research that was made, led by U.S. Secretary of Defense in Obama administration, Ashton Carter. He led a research about the U.S. military technological superiority. The research was called the Third Offset, and the conclusion of such research is that we are really facing a dramatic change, that the American military services not anymore celebrating the absolute technological superiority, not because America became weak regarding technology, but because excellent technology could be found everywhere in the civil market. Even cellular phone today is part of a weapons system. And a lot of American soldiers suffered a lot of casualties and 4,000 found deaths due to that weapon system, that someone, a terrorist, could sit far away with a cellular phone and just playing a charge on a road far away in a distance, and is well protected. So something very different was taking place in the arena of warfare. And Israel, in the narrow seashore between the 67 border and the sea, cannot really defend itself. Just imagine what it means that Tel Aviv and strategic centers like Ben Gurion airfield and other assets will be under direct fire threat of mortars, not to speak about rockets, as we learned from Hamas in Gaza and what Hezbollah developed and really succeeded to create a kind of breaking through. What is a very important breaking through of Hezbollah is that without their devices as a weapon of modern military well-formed units, without submarines, without units, armor units, without F-15, F-16, they succeeded to create a strategic threat in a kind of equilibrium to threaten Israel. And they succeeded to create a kind of balance. If the same threat will emerge between the Jordan and Tel Aviv. General John Allen, directed by President Obama, tried to bring a security plan that will give an answer to the Israeli anxieties. So he supported the idea that the IDF and Israel will withdraw from all Judea and Samaria, including Jordan Valley, and with a lot of modern devices like radars and 300 American soldiers, they will detect that units, Iranian or weapons, will not be smuggled into this territory in order to just keep it as a military zone. But today, really, all these assets are irrelevant. Why? Because they are relevant, and they have been relevant in the 20th century, when we had to detect armored divisions crossing the Jordan River. This, of course, could be detected by radars, but a smuggled Grad rocket in a truck full with potatoes in Allenby Bridge could not be detected by radars and other devices. And even if they could really detect it, today Hamas in Gaza producing them in underground small factories, doing that by themselves, because today with computers and machine guided by computers with metal working, you can produce everything. So the idea of demilitarized zone is an empty concept regarding the new conditions. So our attitude, my attitude, as I explain it in my research, and you can find it, I can send it after to Asaf if he wants. It is very easy to find it in Best Center website. I just explain why Israel must keep itself with military power and settlements in Jordan Valley. Actually, this was also the idea of Yitzhak Rabin. In his last speech in Knesset, 5th of October, 1995, when they voted to accept the new Jordan Valley will be forever the Israeli border, and he emphasized what it means, Jordan River Valley, in its broad interpretation. And you can find in my research what it means, broad interpretation. actually what is more or less in Trump plan. And the last one, last principle was that the Palestinian Authority will be an entity that will be considered as a less than a state. Just today, Prime Minister Netanyahu told us about speaking with Biden, and he asked him, what are your restrictions regarding the Palestinian state? And he said this and this and this, and then Biden said, but this is not a state. And he told him, you can call it whatever you want. This is what is necessary for Israeli security conditions, necessary conditions. So what was made by Trump, it was not just a deal to create peace. It was to recognize the need for Israeli security to be handled by Israelis themselves, with the necessity to keep the territory, especially the Jordan Valley. Why now? A lot of Israelis saying, okay, the status quo is that we are already here. Why we have to make all this scandal going to the unknown future, making everyone to create his own reaction to that? For what, if we are already there? And my answer is that actually, why the Jordan King accepts that we will be there de facto and not de jure? Because when we are there de facto, he can treat us as something that is never being forever, something that happened to be for the circumstances right now. They cannot really accept the Israeli existence forever with permanency. And in a way, we came to a moment in which the permanent annexation, we can call that, and permanent improvement of that territory with infrastructure, with cities that we need to build. It is necessary. Actually, Israeli cities in the narrow seashore are coming to be very, very dense regarding to all proportion, comparing Tel Aviv and Gush Dan cities to other cities in the world. And the potential is in the empty space in the Jordan Valley. And we need that. We are going to be immediately in 10 years, 15 million residents. We cannot just go to the Galilee or to the Negev, because the Galilee is absolutely full. And the Negev is part of places for military training, a lot of other functions. And actually, we cannot find between the Jordan and the sea two viable states, as it was always emphasized, two states living side by side together in an everlasting peace. They cannot be really viable in that narrow geographic conditions. What else? And by that I just come and summarize my short summary. Anyhow, due to the Oslo agreement and due to the leadership of Yitzhak Rabin, Gaza Strip is actually de facto a state. They are not part of the whole agreement regarding the threat. If we will not have this in a Palestinian state, what will happen, a demographic threat, etc. You know that. So Gaza is already with 2 million de facto state. Regarding Judea and Samaria, and we must remember, Gaza Strip is not anymore under occupation, not since the disengagement in 2005, but since May to July 1994, when all Israeli soldiers went away from the concentration place of Palestinians in Gaza, and they've been removed, all of them, all the Palestinian people have been removed to be governed by Palestinian authorities that was just established that time. Since January 1996, most of Palestinians, it means more than 90% in Judean, Samaria, and Jordan Valley, are living under the Palestinian Authority in Zone A and B. The whole debate since that time is not anymore about the Palestinian Authority in Zone A and B, but about Zone C and Jerusalem. And President Obama tried to enforce Israel to withdraw from all Zone C. Actually, Ehud Barak, as Prime Minister in 2000, came to Camp David. He rejected all three principles of Yitzhak Rabin. He gave the Palestinians all the territory, divided Jerusalem. He gave them all the territory, including Jordan Valley, and gave them absolute sovereignty, not just a less than the state. And I asked him, why you went away from Rabin's three principles? He didn't answer me. I think that what happened with the program of President Trump, that he succeeded to bring a better approach, not what was offered by Clinton and Ehud Barak, that it is a disaster for Israel, but to recognize the needs of Israelis' tensions in these territories, and also recognizing the basic linkage of the Israelis to that land as homeland. And by that, it is an opportunity. And if we are under a risk, we can take the risk, because it is very, very important to the future of Israel. Okay? This is 20 minutes.
Yes, it's very good. Thank you, Gershon. Thank you very much for that in-depth analysis. And so with that, now the floor is open. So anybody who has a question, and I know there are a few hands up already, please click on the hand icon and I will be able to unmute you. Let's start with Andrew, and let's see if I can unmute Andrew and you can ask your question. Andrew, can you hear us?
Yes, Andrew? Thank you. Yes, great. I'm here. You're here.
Great. Yes, we can.
Well, I raised my hand right in the beginning because I didn't have any video. Is that correct, that there's no video, only sound?
Only audio, yes, correct.
I see. Okay, that's it.
That's all. Okay, great. Well, that was a quick question. Okay, great. Thank you for that. Let's move on. Go here. Let's go to Jeffrey. Jeffrey, can you hear us? Jeffrey?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Alderman from London, England. Could I ask our speaker about what his views are on offering Israeli citizenship and passports and so on to Palestinian Arabs living in the territories that may be reunited with the State of Israel? Does he favor this? If so, why? And if not, why? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gershon?
Yes, a very likely question. And if it was dependent upon my attitude, I would go straight, without hesitation, to say every place in which the Israeli law coming to be established with what is called annexation, everyone living there is one man, one vote, citizen, equal citizen. I have no problem with that. And it is not a problem to the demographic proportion, because in all Zone C, Altogether, there are no more than 100,000 Palestinians. Beyond that, I myself have deep friendship with a lot of Palestinians. I worked with them to build my house 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I worked with them. I love them. And all those that I know in the district of Gush Etzion, since the beginning of Oslo, they had a dream to get Israeli citizenship. Just imagine what it means for them for practical affairs in life. They'll get social insurance, medical insurance, free access to every place in Israel, in the same status of those living in Jerusalem. The 300,000 Palestinians in Jerusalem, still they don't have absolutely an absolute citizenship, but they have basic necessary rights like national security, medical security. They can go to every place in Israel. They can walk everywhere, live everywhere. And a girl in Jerusalem, Palestinian, with these rights, her father has to pay her for wedding much less than another girl from the other side of Palestinian Authority, because they are recognizing the potential of that. What about absolute citizenship? It is okay, but here we have just to demand them in the same way that the American demanding loyalty to the Constitution. This is a very complicated issue, but principally, I'm just going to that direction. Why, Prime Minister, I don't know whether at all it is just for first step or second step, saying that at the beginning they will not get the whole rights. I think if I have to explain it, I think that there is here a very specific anxiety. Because if today they are living there no more than 50,000 to 100,000 people, if we will declare that they are immediately getting Israeli full citizenship, we will not succeed to stop the immigration from all other sides of Judea and Samaria to these places that are going to be under that annexation. So at the beginning, before we are making a kind of control about who is really living there, I think that first of all, we are freezing the situation. And what next? I think that at the next it will bring to that. Okay?
Great. Thank you for that. All right. So there are a few written questions that have come in, and I promised that I would get to them as well. So our friend and colleague, Mark Clairfield, who is in Israel at Ben Gurion University, sent a few questions. I know he's on the phone, so I'm going to read. He sent several, but I'm going to try to address, give you two of his questions and I'll try to combine them. One, he is interested in your take on what all of this will do to relations with Egypt and Jordan, as far as given the fact that they are strategic partners vis-a-vis Israeli security. And second, also what this will do to diplomatic relations with the EU. But why don't you start first? Why don't you first start with Egypt and Jordan?
Of course, everyone must pay attention to that issue, not to be blind about the risk that something could just, we will find it going beyond control. We don't want that. But principally, and I wrote about that, and therefore even you called me, we must come back to Camp David 78, 79. Between Menachem Begin, Israeli Prime Minister, and Anwar Sadat. And also that demanded Israel as a package deal, not only to withdraw from Sinai and to get a peace agreement, but also to be committed to solve the Palestinian issue. And he insisted about that obligation. Menachem Begin offered the idea of autonomy to the Palestinian people. And whether it was enough or not regarding the vision of Sadat, I think that it was not enough. Menachem Begin tried to believe that if you'll do that, it will be enough and Anwar Sadat will be satisfied, because what is really interesting for him, he will already get it. And all the other demands are just for the protocol and for the history and not really taken seriously. But the Egyptians took that absolutely seriously. And Israel found itself in a situation that at any moment, the Egyptians, and after the same regarding the Jordanian, Israel could be squeezed and be exploited by the fact that they can threaten that the peace process and the peace situation and stability will get damages due to demands that Israel not accepted or not accepting to follow them. It means that by entering to the peace process, they succeeded to create a kind of power to manipulate the Israeli government and to squeeze it. The same about Jerusalem. We can take, for example, the bridge to the Western Bridge to Mount of Temple and what is called the Mugrabi Bridge. It was not built, even though the old plans got all stations of insurance of assuring them, and etc. Why? Because the Jordanian didn't want that bridge to be built. So everyone coming to the Western Wall can watch that bridge that looked to be as always in between, always in the moment that tomorrow we are not anymore there. And all that could be done by the power the Jordanian got due to the peace process. The same with what happened in 2 years ago with the terrorist action against policemen in the Mount of Temple. Two have been killed, and the government decided to put magnometers in the gates. And again, a new crisis emerged. And without speaking with the king, we cannot solve the crisis. And at the end, we have to take them back and to obey the demands of the king. It means that we are finding ourselves in a peace process in which the interests of Egypt and Jordan are always coming to be a pressure against Israel. And the interest of Israel cannot be really considered by Jordanian or by Egyptians. For example, in Sinai, due to the struggle, the Egyptian army has to lead in Sinai against ISIS, and they are losing around 700 soldiers in a year in this engagement. The Israeli side led them to bring equipment and units far away beyond the military restrictions in the peace agreement because we consider their interest. When we can find a situation in which in a mutual response, they will just give respect to Israeli interest, and the situation of Jordan Valley annexation is a very important Israeli interest regarding the circumstances of Trump plan, and who knows what will happen several months later, who will be the president, I don't know. So the opportunity is now, and it is an Israeli interest, and if they will just prevent us from going ahead with that opportunity, it is not to say that they are considering seriously and respecting our interests. This is my approach to them. And right. I think this is peace, to consider the interest of each other.
Great. Thank you for that. Again, there are no, obviously everybody here knows that there are no short answers to any of these questions, and we appreciate, you know, everybody listening to the analysis. Gershon, let me go over to Chaim here and see if we can connect him. Actually, that's not working. Let's try another question here. Right, let's try Sammy here, Sammy Stein. Sammy, can you hear us? Sammy? Okay, that's not working. Let's try again. Okay, we'll try the next person. Okay, I'm going to try Thomas. Thomas, can you hear us? Thomas? Thomas, are you able to hear us? Thomas? Okay, we'll go to the next person. Okay, while I'm looking to unmute people, let me read some of the questions that have come in. Okay. And see if we can tackle some of this stuff as well. So one question that came in from our friend and colleague Francine Lipstein, and she is asking whether or not thinking ahead, what would everything you're describing now mean to Abbas's departure, whether it's naturally or not naturally, and the question of partnership and who should Israel negotiate with, obviously, you know, on the other side as it relates to the Palestinian Authority post Mahmoud Abbas?
First of all, to the last question, what will happen after Mahmoud Abbas? Nobody knows. No one in his close team really getting a kind of title that he's going to be the leader after him. Of course, after he will go away, one day he will go away, that's nature. Could be that a struggle will emerge among their rivals who will be the follower of him. I myself, as a reservist, I'm working in writing and leading war games and exercises and experimentations for the general staff and to the territorial commands, and I just led something like that to the central territorial command. We have a lot of open questions. What will be the future after him? That's really a riddle, who knows? And I'm not a determinist to think that God must know. Even God, according to the Kabbalah tradition, there are questions that he is keeping open. I think this is an open question.
That's a good one. I like that.
Regarding the threat that they will close all connection to Israeli authorities, it is a threat, but the people themselves are so in trouble and not really trying to close their anxieties, and they are expressing them. I spoke with a lot of them. What is really important for most of them is to just continuing working with Israelis to bring payment and salaries home. If we are just taking the numbers, 100,000 are working every day in Israel. Imagine what they are getting, just in order to get a proportion. At the beginning of that year of studies, September, the teachers in Jordan made riots because they protested to get higher salary. They just demanded to get 300 dinars. 300 dinars coming to be 1,500 shekel for a month. A Palestinian worker in Israel getting that in 3 days. He's paid almost 500 shekel for a day. And it is a lot. And if they are coming every day to work and bring that money home, and each one bringing payment to around 10 people in his family, not just his small family, but his father and brothers, it means that the Israelis are feeding more than a million people in Judea and Samaria. And it is a real factor in stability. And Abu Mazen critically aware about that. And they are aware about their economical dependence upon the Israeli economy. And if we are just coming to examine what was working good with Oslo Agreement, what coming to be indispensable, the branch of the agreement that deals with the economical life, what is called a Paris Agreement, is really indispensable regarding the situation of two entities that are really dependent upon each other. It is not that they are dependent upon Israelis. The Israelis are also dependent upon them, the workers, the Palestinian workers. Even in the Golan Heights, the Druze, now they worked a lot with the sheriffs. They are really dependent upon Palestinian workers. So the two economies actually behaving as one united economy. And if even Abu Mazen want to create some difficulties to the formal connections, there are a lot of requirements in daily business life that are really stronger than a lot of leaders. And what will really happen, we don't know. More than that, I'm speaking with Palestinian workers and businessmen. They are still remembering how much they suffer in the Intifada that emerged in September, October 2000. They really lost a lot. And they are living today with this memory. I don't know what will come out today. And not everything is in our control, not only in Israel's control, also not in Abu Mazen control and not in Hamas control. We are in a situation that, of course, creating a kind of risk, but looking to a longer range for years, for decades, I think that to take the risk now and to bring a kind of arrangement to that situation will create better conditions to all people in between the Jordan and the sea.
Great, thank you. I'm going to go keeping an eye on the clock, so I make sure that we try to get to as many questions as we can. So I thank you for that in advance. So here's a question, Gershon, that came in. Given you know, the reality that we're facing here in the States and the impact. So given what's going on now as far as the riots that I'm sure you've been following here in the United States, Black Lives Matter, and the attempts that to link between what happened between the police departments and actions in Israel, what is known as the allegations of deadly exchanges, that Israel is exporting so-called racist ideologies. This is something that is pervasive within the BDS movement to American policing. The question that Thomas has here, isn't it wrong now to carry out the annexation as it will impact and erode American support for Israel? So your thoughts on that?
I'll just tell you an anecdote that from it we can go ahead. 1 week before the last election in Israel, I was in duty as reservist in the general staff in Tel Aviv. At midnight, I came back to sleep in Tel Aviv, and a Palestinian worker, I know him, that working in a house, in building house near my wife in Tel Aviv, he showed me a picture he made in his cellular phone with Benny Gantz. He just went after work, he's sleeping here, to find good time in the pub in Dizengoff. And Benny Gantz made his effort 1 week before the election to collect supporters. And he was willing to make picture with everybody. So he told me, listen, I have a picture with your prime minister, with your former prime minister, Benny Gantz. And he's from Judean Samaria somewhere, I know from well. And it means that, of course, we have problems. All human beings must check themselves every day about the main issue, how they are treating the others, the weak, the different, of course. But I think that in Israel, if we are going to Tel Aviv, we will not find restrictions. People can go everywhere, can take every bus, can take hospitals everywhere. My father was in hospital in Jerusalem. I like Jerusalem because Jerusalem is the place in which the Israeli-Arabs relationships are part of concrete daily life. So my father in a room in hospital, three others are Palestinians. The team working there, the medical team, half of them are Palestinians. And they are working quite excellently, really. What else I like to emphasize, I think that everyone saw the beautiful movie that got Oscar, The Green Book, American movie. What we can find in that excellent movie is a message that someone could be absolutely racist, but at the moment, in concrete mission, he's finding himself day after day for 2 months together with an Afro-American pianist. And they are coming to be real brothers, not due to great ideas that coming to this American-Italian to change his mind, but due practical friction in life. And I think that in Israel, even though there are people speaking badly, in actual life, we can find a lot of shared activities in every building that people are walking, in every garage. I myself doing a lot with them, with non-Jewish Palestinians. And I never find a problem from them, exactly the opposite. So I'm really, maybe you can say I'm naive, but I'm living with the hope. Okay?
Great. Thank you for that. I think we have time for one more question here, and let me try to look. Let's see if we can unmute Moshe here. Let's see if we can get his question. Moshe, can you hear us? Moshe, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks for the presentation. I'm not sure, I have many questions, but I'll try to summarize. Even according to the Trump proposal, the annexation cannot be unilateral by Israel. It has to be with agreement or coordination with other Arab countries and the Palestinians himself. So my question to you, do you support an announcement about annexation coming in by the end of this month, unilaterally by Israel, with the unknowns that you yourself mentioned? There's too much that we don't know. Is it worth the risk? Or do you think that actually the main motivation of Bibi is really for internal political reasons rather than solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Great, thank you. Gershon?
First of all, we have to understand what, in a way, I'm telling to myself regarding the history of the last months since the declaration in the White House, what happened the day immediately, the day after, and what's going on today. At the beginning, Netanyahu really thought that he's going to declare annexation immediately. And that was due to the vision of President Trump, that he gave the key to Netanyahu to do that in the places in which anyhow will belong to the Israelis in at the end of the whole process. And this will be unconditionally to Arab states or Palestinians. After, with the restrictions that led, could be by his son-in-law Kushner, he realized that it is better to go to make another effort to get support of Saudi Arabia, of the Emirates, Jordan, Egypt. Therefore, he just decided to tell Netanyahu to hold it, to wait for that, to wait after the election. But what is part of the trick of President Trump that is so different from all that was so complicated before and didn't bring to a final solution is the idea from Trump that he's not really dependent upon Palestinian acceptance. Because even what was offered to Arafat in Camp David 2000 by Ehud Barak, and what was offered to the chairman Abu Mazen by Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, even that didn't bring to a final agreement. So they had the last word and they always find another excuse not to bring it to a complete agreement. What we can find with a first planning of President Trump is that he wants to tell the Palestinians that history will not wait to them. If they will not really come to join the process, the joint will go ahead anyhow. Therefore, he gave them 4 years to think about that. And he gave Netanyahu the permission to make annexation to 30% of Zone C. Not 30%, 30% of Judea and Samaria, then 50% of Zone C. It means Jordan Valley and settlements. What really will come out now, I am sure that the whole process in the decision-making of Netanyahu dependent upon the permission of President Trump. Without that support, we're coming back to what is called back to square one, to the end of 67 war, and the question why Israel didn't declare that all this territory is Israel, due to the fact that, of course, the European Union are not supporting it, but the Americans as well didn't give support. The breaking through of President Trump, that he was the first one to recognize that not only something happened in all these 53 years in the territory, but he declares that, like Balfour Declaration, that the whole story is not just for security. It is due to something sublime from that, coming from the trust in the Bible, etc. And that declaration really changed the game. And what really will come out right now, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Great. Well, that's a good place, I think, to end. Unfortunately, our time is up, but I really do want to thank you, Gershon, for taking the time to talk to us this afternoon. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. I know there are more questions, and there's a lot of questions about what's going to be, and I apologize, we were not able to get to all your questions. If you do, again,
ask questions, of course.
Yes, there's a lot of questions. And of course, please feel free to send your questions to us at bdsmonitor@spme.org. Again, bdsmonitor@spme.org. And we'll do our best to, if Gershon is okay with that, we'll send you some questions later on to respond after the call. But again, I want to thank you, Alex. I want to thank you as always for joining me. I know we didn't get a chance to get to your comments as a result of time constraints, but I thank you for being here as well. But above all, I want to thank all of you. I know there were a lot of people who joined us this afternoon, and some were able to get on, some were not, but we will continue the conversation. And above all, of course, wherever you are in this current situation, please stay healthy and safe. And we will continue the conversation with other topics in the next few weeks as well. So, Gershon, thank you again. Thank you, Alex, and thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.